Welcome to the Herbs with Rosalie podcast, a show exploring how herbs heal as medicine, as food, and through nature connection. I'm your host, Rosalie de la Forêt. I'm an herbalist teacher and the best-selling author of the books Alchemy of Herbs and Wild Remedies. I created this podcast to share trusted herbal wisdom so that you can get the best results when relying on herbs for your health. I love offering up practical knowledge to help you dive deeper into the world of medicinal plants and seasonal living. My goal is that you'll walk away from each episode feeling inspired to start working with herbs in your everyday life. Each episode of the podcast is available on my Herbs with Rosalie YouTube channel, as well as your favorite podcast app. Transcripts and recipes for each episode can be found at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com. To get the latest news as well as fun bonuses, be sure to sign up for my weekly herbal newsletter. Okay, grab your cup of tea. Let's dive in. Karina Wood is well known in the herbal community as she founded and directed the Southeast Wise Women Herbal Conference for 15 years. In some ways, I can't believe that this is the first time I had a chance to meet up with her, but I'm thrilled it finally happened. And I love that she chose mugwort as her plant. It's a new one to the show, and it's a plant well worth knowing. For those of you who don't already know her, Karina Wood is a seasoned teacher of holistic healing and women's wisdom. In addition to creating the Southeast Wise Women Herbal Conference, she also ran Red Moon Herbs for 20 years. She supported thousands of women on their journeys of healing and wholeness. Currently, Karina has applied principles of the natural world to create tools for inner growth and healing through an earth-based, women-centered lens. Today, her offerings are at the cutting edge of synthesizing natural healing with feminist psychology and earth-based wisdom. Welcome to the Herbs with Rosalie podcast, Karina.
So glad to be here, Rosalie. Thank you.
Well, we were just talking briefly before we hit record, and it's kind of silly. This is our first time getting to know each other, but I'm so glad that moment is here.
Finally, at last.
Yeah. Well, I am like
together.
Yes, finally. This is just the moment it was meant to be. So yay, we're here. And I feel like I have 1,000 questions for you because I just really want to get to know you. But I'm just going to turn it over to you to begin with. And I want to hear your story and your meandering path through the life of herbs and all that has brought you to us here today.
Yeah, thank you. Let's see. So entering the herbal world, even as a child, I was really drawn to like science and like the science of like outside. Like there was a science center that was near my house and I volunteered there as a child and like took care of their ferret and their other like little displays and things. And then I got to go on their nature walks. I still remember the feeling of seeing the leader dipping the jewel weed down into the pond to show us how that silvery sheen on the leaves becomes visible as it's underwater, and that's what gave jewelweed its name, and that it was good for poison ivy. And I was like, that made a big impression on me. I decided after that if the world fell apart, my family would eat nuts and berries and we'd be fine. And I don't know that my family really knew much about any of that, but it was a source of really solace and safety for me. Nature has always been that. So when I graduated from high school, I actually took a couple of years off in between to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I had been on an Ivy League track. I deferred admission to Brown University. And I decided instead, at least first, to go see the world, find out what I really wanted to do with my life. And so I got a Greyhound bus ticket that you could like get on and off like around the country. And there was a little biking in there and a little hitchhiking. And I started visiting intentional communities because I had been involved with political activism in my teens, and then I'd come to the decision that I wanted to be part of building the alternative. And I was really intrigued by what I understood, where some of the intentional communities were exploring, like growing food and gender equality and those kinds of things. I ended up actually at River Farm, which you probably know out in Washington State.
I don't. Yeah, I don't.
So it's Deming, Washington, outside of Bellingham.
Okay.
And I was learning to garden there. I was really excited. And my mom had had a garden, but I hadn't really been that into it at that point. So now I was like understanding, oh, like brassicas, like if you breed them for the leaves, then you have kale and collards. Or if you breed them for the flower buds, you have broccoli. So I was like, how all these fit together. And then the woman who was teaching me how to garden, between the rows of brassicas, we were pulling up these weeds. And she's like, oh, yeah, you can eat the lamb's quarter, the chickweed that we're pulling up. And I was like, oh, whoa, what did you say? So that was the next step of my decision to really study something between holistic healing, sustainable agriculture, like somewhere in that realm. And so then I came to the decision that that wasn't going to be available in the Ivy League schools. So I set up my independent course of study actually at the Evergreen State College out your in your
I
neck
do
of the
know
woods.
that. I do know Evergreen.
And I was doing independent study as well as science and nutrition and botany and biology in the classroom. And that herbalism independent study, I mean, I would like wake up in the morning and be like, what plant can I find today to eat? You know, what wild plant can I go out and find to eat? And then to record in my, I had this whole index system of like the medicinal uses and like drawing and pressing the plants and such. And so then I had a small group of women who were at one point doing independent study in herbs together because it wasn't so available then as it is now. This is over 30 years ago. And she had found eagle song. And so we arranged a plant walk with eagle song. And that was like the jewel weed plant walk times 10, because she was like taking me out by the hand and, you know, this is how you identify it. This is how my family uses this plant as food and as medicine. So wanted more of that. Really loved how she spoke of the wise woman tradition. She introduced me also to Susan Weed's work, which really resonated for me. And so I really dove into the wise woman tradition of herbal medicine and just love how that's so much about working with the plants that grow where you live and the place where the lines between food and medicine blur. So it just resonated so deeply for me. Like I would show up at one of the little groups with my independent study group. I remember the day we were going to make herbal oil. And so I had picked a bunch of plantain leaves from outside my doorstep and came over to the other woman's house where we were meeting that day. And I was like, oh, everybody else brought dried herbs from the store. Like, oh, just really recognizing, oh, I'm really. No, I'm really wanting to like figure out what's just around me, as I know so many herbalists do today. After I moved to the mountains of North Carolina, I lived in a chestnut board cabin. So it was like uninsulated. It was just from the time that these mountains used to have chestnuts trees as one of the predominant species before the chestnut blight. So there's these big wide boards with an inch or so of light coming through and carrying water from the spring and chopping wood for the wood cook stove. There was no electricity. So I was really connecting with the seasons, with the earth. And at that point I was starting to teach herbs. There was a nettle patch I had harvested at so much. And at one point it was like, actually the plant started talking to me. When I would go to ask permission, they would say, people want to know what you're doing. You need to start teaching this. So that just grew. I was teaching at the auxiliary, I forget what you call it, programs of local colleges, and also started doing my own classes and medicine making, and just the medicines were overflowing. Jessica Godino, my dear friend, came to live with me in North Carolina. She had a big bunch of herbal medicines that were also overflowing. And so together we put that into Red Moon Herbs. I hand wrote our first catalog. We did, there were Xerox machines in those days, but so I copied it, but I wasn't even like doing the typewriter thing. I was handwriting it by candlelight in my chestnut board cabin. I have very nice handwriting though. It was quite lovely. And then sent it out to, not by email, because I wasn't even a thing, but by physical mail to the people who were in our paper address books, you know, friends and family. So that's how we started. My brother made the first order. He ordered St. J's, St. Joan's Wort, St. John's Wort oil. And yeah, we just continued to grow from there. And now it's thriving mail order across the country, wholesale accounts that I've passed the baton to Jeannie Dunn about 10 years ago. So I ran Red Moon Herbs for 20 years. Jessica left about the middle of that to study acupuncture. And yeah, I ran Red Moon for 20 years and then passed the baton to Jeannie Dunn about 10 years ago. And then in those years, I was concurrently teaching herbal medicine and women's health. And I founded the Southeast Wise Women Herbal Conference, which I ran for 15 years. And it became the largest herbal conference in the country, wildly popular.
How many attendees would you have at a given in a given year?
It was over 1,000. So
that's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, 1,300-ish. Mm-hmm.
What an event. I'm sad that I didn't have the opportunity to go.
I know. Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah, to be, I've been to the International Herb Symposium, which is also fairly large, but that would definitely have been the biggest conference to attend. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I'd love to hear just more about that. Like, did you start off much smaller? How did it grow over the years? And
yeah. So let's see, the first year that I started the conference, put out a mailing to my then, by then, much larger mailing list at Red Moon Herbs and with my classes, because I was teaching during all those years as well. And I had just been, I mean, really it's standing, of course, on the shoulders of the other women's herbal conferences that were around the country already at that time. The Northeast, now New England Women's Herbal Conference. I had actually been to like close to 20 years old when it was at Gail Ulrich's farm before, when she died, Rosemary had taken it over. And so that experience had really inspired me. And then Eagle Song was running the Northwest Women's Herbal Conference and the California Women's Herbal Symposium. So I was looking around at my students and customers, herbal medicine customers, thinking these women are like hungry for this. This region is ready for it. And it took me a little while to dawn on me that it was going to be me who was going to do it. So when I did, yeah, I sent out a mailing to my people and we had about 200 the first year. And it was...
Which is still a very good size. That is not... I would not call that a small gathering. Yeah.
And it was in that experience of going through the first year that I was like, of actually being there physically on site, that I was like, oh yeah, this is a good thing. Like this is definitely something that can grow. So it grew by about 100 a year, but then I guess it started getting more leaps and bounds because we did get to 800 or so by maybe the fifth year, and then 1,000 plus for a number of years.
Wow. Well, I have no doubt that there's people listening right now who are
absolutely fans of red herbs. And oh, such a beautiful web. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your trajectory. I definitely felt a lot, so many parallels with you. I was also involved with activism and then also wanted to be part of the solution and re-envisioning. And of course, you know, we were joking before we went live again about there's like probably lots of 1 degrees of separation. But yes, of course, I know Eagle Song. And
I'm sure you would. Yeah.
I am really excited to hear what you have to share with us about mugwort. This is a plant that just continually intrigues me. I have it growing all over my property that I'm growing the native varieties, but I planted them. And it's just a plant that just holds a lot of mystique for me. And so, I'm excited to hear what you have to share.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so Artemisia is the genus, the botanical name. Vulgaris is the species. So Artemis, the moon goddess, Vulgaris, common. So it is a very common, weedy plant, as you well know. And the name Artemisia also is reflected in the sheen on the underside of the leaf. So there's this silver sheen of the moon underneath the leaf, which is one of the ways that you can identify mugwort. And identifying mugwort is super duper important because it has the deeply divided leaves and can be confused with one of the most poisonous plants in North America, which is poison hemlock. So for that reason, it is essential to be absolutely positive of the identification, especially before using it internally. The poison hemlock grows much taller and has these wide spreading flowers in umbrellas. The poison hemlock is in the umbelliferae family, the parsley family, whereas the mugwort is in the composite daisy family and has a cone, a raceme of, they're small, like greenish, yellowish balls, flowers on them, whereas the poison hemlock has the umbrella-shaped white 6 inches plus wide cluster of flowers. So you want to make sure that you have those identifying features super clear. Don't just go on like what you heard on the podcast. You want to get some visuals in front of you and or someone who knows to point them out to make sure that you've got the Artemisia vulgaris.
And here, when people are watching on YouTube, we will always put photos up. And for people who are listening on the podcast, you can always jump over to YouTube if you want to see those images.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Yeah. I can also put a link to my blog article about mugwort.
Fabulous.
That people can get to through the show notes that has a lot of photos and also how to identify the poisonous.
Now, once you see those flowers, they're very distinct from each other. There's not an easy way to confuse them, I think, once you know,
then you can totally get it. And also the Artemisia vulgaris, the mugwort, has this really distinctive scent. So when you crush, if you're weeding, and I have a lot of students who are like, I was weeding this out of my garden, and now I'm realizing I've been smelling this scent. And that is part of that magical, mystical connection that mugwort has to offer. Mm-hmm. I love using mugwort later in the year between summer solstice and autumn equinox when it is in its flowering time. Then I'll use it for just like dream pillows or smudge sticks. it's actually really closely related to the desert sage that is often used for smudge sticks, the Artemisia tridentata. How I like to work with mugwort in the early spring is making a vinegar. And it's actually the only time that I use mugwort internally. In general, I prefer to stick to the magical, mystical properties like the dream pillows with this plant. But when it's just in its really early stage, up to 6 inches high in the very early spring, is when I love to make my mugwort vinegar for the year.
I have to say, Krino, when I saw this recipe come through, your mugwort vinegar recipe, which everyone can download a beautiful illustration of this recipe by going to the show notes at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com. But when I saw this come through, I was like, really? A vinegar? I hadn't thought of that. It's definitely not something I do with mugwort. So I am, this podcast has been so amazing for me personally to get it, little bits of inspiration. And I'm definitely excited to try out mugwort as a vinegar. So yeah, tell me more about it. You could tell me about how you make it. You could tell me why you make it. I want to know all the things.
Yeah, and people do have different like ways of working, of course, with all the plants, but with mugwort especially. And like some people do it internally at other times, but I err on the side of caution and I just do it in those first real early spring stage. I harvest with scissors and take clip off, kind of give it a haircut on the tops. And mugwort is very strong growing and prolific. I don't necessarily take every bit in general. As a rule of thumb, I don't take more than a third of a patch, just in, with plants in general, with mugwort, because it's such an it actually considered an invasive weed and is so incredibly strong. I might take a little bit more. And so then I gather up my mugwort greens, pack a jar full with the plant material, and then fill it again with apple cider vinegar. I like to use raw organic apple cider vinegar. Sometimes you get a mother in there as it's brewing, and it just looks a little bit like a jellyfish without tentacles. But the motherwort is just, I mean, the mother. The mother in the vinegar, not to be confused with the plant called motherwort or the plant that we're talking about, which is mugwort. But the mother in the vinegar just contains the seeds like of what originally fermented the vinegar. So it's just kind of like recoalescing and like offering to support to ferment a new vinegar if you wanted to go put it into some apple cider. But you can just strain the mother. Strain the mother out and put it in the compost. And that's only if you're using raw apple cider vinegar that you might get it. And you can have it can sometimes come up while you're brewing your mugwort vinegar, or it can come up even after you've strained out the plant material. So you'll cover your jar of mugwort with the vinegar now also up to the top. And when you do so, you want to use either a plastic lid, or I'll cut out a little bit of wax paper and put it over a metal lid to protect the metal, because vinegar rusts metal. And so you don't want to have that in your vinegar. The next day, the plant material will have absorbed some of the liquid. So, like with most medicines, you would top it off with a little bit more vinegar, and you can do that once or twice over the first week or so, and keep an eye on it as it brews for 6 weeks. And then you strain it out. And it's actually, Rosalie, I'm so excited to that you have so much mugwort. It's my favorite of all of the herbal vinegars. It's
Wow.
so flavorful. And the vinegars are also like a really mineral rich, like it's a good way to, because of the acidity, extract the minerals from the plants. So I consider it really nutritious. And then also it's delicious. And so then I'll put a little bit into like sprinkled on cooked greens, so just as a condiment at the table, like in a vinegar bottle, or into salad dressings. So I always like to make my own homemade salad dressing. So you're using good high quality oils like olive oil. And I love having the mugwort vinegar in there. It's my favorite.
Yeah, so, you know, I've drank mugwort tea and had mugwort tincture. It's fairly bitter, but I'm guessing because you're harvesting so young that you're really capturing these beautiful aromatics.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. It's a really tasty, I mean, maybe a hint of bitterness, but mostly it's the aromatic. And I'll sometimes also make like chickweed vinegar and then have like a combination of the two. So if it was strong, that would be another way to do it. But I find it to be delicious. I highly recommend it. And yes, because you're doing it early in the year.
Well, I'm very excited to try this out this year. Yeah, wonderful. And what are ways that you like to work with mugwort? Like you mentioned several just in passing.
So later in the year when the plant is in flower, and so at that point it's tall, it's like maybe 3 feet tall or something like that, that is when I understand the energetic and magical properties to be at the highest. And so this is also the plant that's used for in Chinese medicine as moxibustion on acupuncture points or acupressure points. They have like a little cone of moxa. They start to burn, but it doesn't burn all the way down to your skin. I know it sounds a little scary, but it's very nourishing energetically. So it has a long history of being used for these energetic purposes. And yeah, the dream pillows. So again, I'm using it in these non-internal ways in this later phase of the year when it's come into its flowering time and it's several feet high. It's such a dry plant that it's easy to dry it pretty quickly. Actually, if you want to make smudge sticks, you can even just wrap a few stems together and then I'll just wrap the cotton thread around them while they're still fresh, which I wouldn't do with hardly any other plants. Usually we'll dry plants just hung separately. But with the mugwort, it's so dry that you can dry it that way. Or if you're making dream pillows, you would dry the sticks more separately or the stalks more separately. So you're including the flowers and the leaves. And then I'll just strip those leaves off of the stalk and also get those flowering tops. I just don't use the stalks in my dream pillow only because I don't want it like sticky uppy around my bed. And so then you can use something as simple as a sock or as fancy as like an embroidered little square or round 3 to 6 inch pillow case to put your stuff with your mugwort, which helps to make dreams more vivid and more memorable. So I used mugwort a lot during a period where I was looking to increase my self-trust, my trust for myself. And I decided that my dreams were, you know, they're a powerful source of inner wisdom and guidance, but it was hard to remember them. So with my mugwort dream pillow tucked under my pillow, as you're inhaling the scent, it stimulates, how I understand it to work is that it stimulates creative centers of your brain. And I would wake up in the morning and get my journal out and write down those dreams. And I used it for about 18 months. It helped me so much to connect with that source of inner wisdom. And then I was like, okay, my dreams are vivid and memorable enough. And I retired that dream pillow.
Did you feel that you were able to still sleep soundly? You just remembered.
Yeah, just that I found that when I woke up, I had a clearer sense of where I had been.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share about Mugwort?
Well, so with the smudge sticks, that is a it's a tradition. I mean, part of what I love about the just herbalism is it reconnects all of us with our own indigenous roots. It's like that, like the history of working, with even invasive plants like mugwort or chickweed or dandelion or plantain have long roots in various parts of the world. And working with smoke from plants is a tradition that indigenous people around the world did in so many ways and so many places. And so I just love that connection and that reminder that we all have earth-based indigenous roots when you go far enough back. So we don't need to be, co-opting anybody else's. It's like we all have our own, whether you're from Africa or Europe and your roots, like myself, or North America or South America. Okay, so I enjoy doing, yes, burning the mugwort for like, so I do these smudge sticks where you're drying it, like I was saying, and I wrap the cotton thread like diagonally in one direction, about an inch apart each wrap, and then back in the other direction. It's while it's drying. And then when the thickest part snaps instead of bending is when I consider it dry. It might take a week or a few days. And this is assuming that you have good drying conditions for both how you would work with the dream pillows and the smudge sticks, where you're, wanting to have a low humidity environment out of direct sunlight. So once your smudge stick is dry, then you can use it, just like you would with a desert sage bundle or white sage, which is not botanically related but is also used as a smudge. So like to clear a space, or like if you move into a house and feels like the energy of the last people is still there, and you like can go through all the closets and all the spots, and just helps to clear the energy and set the space.
I love mugwort for this too, because like you said, it's weedy, it's often very accessible, and it has such a unique and wonderful scent that it's all its own. So it's a really fun one to get to form that relationship with.
Mugwort is such a common plant. It's just that's why it's called vulgaris, and a lot of folks are pulling it up as a weed. So just working with, that's always my favorite, is to like work with those plants that are the quote unquote weeds, which is really just depending on whether we want them there or not, but to discover their edible and medicinal uses.
Yeah, here in Washington, we do have some native varieties of mugwort. So it's good to get to know, if you do have different varieties. So we have like Artemis ludovickiana that grows near, and that's what I grow in my garden and everything since it's a native plant. But yeah, it's a good thing to get to know. And then, maybe be a little bit more conservative, and well, definitely be a little bit more conservative if you're dealing with a native plant. But the mugwort, the vulgaris has definitely, been welcomed into the land in many places and could stand to be harvested in a very fruitful way.
Yeah, there's so many Artemisias. There's also all the wormwoods that have their own, medicinal benefits and toxic properties too. So, yeah, the Artemisia, the mugwort, is the one that I like to use for smudge sticks.
Yeah, just having the plant in my garden has been so much fun. Like you talked about this, Karina, how it has this beautiful sheen underneath the leaves that has a lot of, for us, connection to the moon and this, this beautiful quality to it. And I, so this is just like entertaining for me, is I try to match my outfit with the plant that we're talking about. And I have a lot of hand knits. And so I keep telling myself, like, I need to knit more sweaters for myself so I can like have more options to wear, because definitely the green sweaters get worn a lot. But today, as I was prepping for our conversation, I was like, how am I going to do mugwort? Like, how do I get that beautiful, like,
oh, you did it. It's beautiful.
Well, you know, it was like, this is the one that seems the best fit. But I was definitely like, I need to step up my knitting game. Like, what if when I like opened up my arms, there was like, you know, white underneath, or like, but it's not white though. It's like this beautiful silver. Yeah. So anyway,
that's great.
The plants keep inspiring. I'm going to have to try a little harder for mugwort, but
yeah. I have a fond memory of the house after I moved out of the chestnut cabin was the next house. We called it Deep Roots, and it was also like fairly rustic, but it did have like insulated walls and such. But the bathroom was a little dilapidated, and there was a bathtub out in the really like wild, weedy herb garden that was outside the back door. And so we were renting from a woman who had just like created a lovely herb garden that I'm sure was very well manicured at one time, but everything, including the house and the garden, had just become somewhat overgrown. And we're kind of like, she's like, you can rent this as is. And so we were young and really into the plants. So yeah, I just remember being out there in the full moon in the bathtub with the mugwort around me. Mm-hmm. So I would like carry out buckets of hot water from the stove, and because there wasn't actually a bathtub in the bathroom. And that is the time. So in that season between summer solstice and autumn equinox, like the Lammas time, August 1st is often considered Lammas. And I consider it a whole season, like between the season of summer solstice and the season of fall equinox. And so that is generally the time that I like to harvest the mugwort. And I do think if you can get it on the full moon, it's especially potent.
Yeah. Special. Well, thanks for that. Yeah. Great tip. Yeah, Krina, that was also something I had a parallel with you as well. As I lived off grid for about 10 years.
Oh, and so yeah.
Also carried water and
okay.
And also had a, you know, I loved every moment of it. I really did. I was ready to move on when we did.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I did love it. And one of the best gifts of that time was that connection to the seasons and really experiencing that. You know, the place was not well insulated. And so we felt the heat of the summer. We felt the cold of the winter. There was, you know, no escaping into an alternate temperature reality in that sense. And I had to embrace it, you know, ultimately. I definitely spent the first winter there kind of whining a lot because it was very cold. After that, we learned how to use the wood stove a little better, but that first winter was freaking cold. But anyway, so I like really had that, you know, that created just this like, oh, the beauty of kind of the harshness and what it is, you know, to just be present in the seasons. And I know that's become something that's been very important for you. And anyway, I'd love to hear about the programs you offer and the things you have going on and how you kind of connect all of this. You have your herbal offerings, you have inner growth offerings. So let's hear about it, Krina.
Thank you. Yeah. So through my concurrent journey, personally, of inner growth and healing over these years that I was doing Red Moon and the conference, I also developed systems to address the mind, heart, soul aspects of holistic healing. And I applied principles of herbalism and the natural world to create tools for inner growth and healing. And this was enormously helpful for me to get from my life being a hot mess to living a life I love, grounded and replenished. And as I got to the point where I was able to get the tools in a form that I could share with other women, I've just been so humbled and amazed to watch them also come to meaningful priorities, authentic relationships, healthy boundaries. So one of the aspects of that, of these tools with inner growth and healing, is around following the cycles of the seasons and recognizing that we have all of those cycles, all those parts of the cycles within us. So, you know, the root time of the year when the plants are sending the energy down below the ground reflects our own innate needs for rest and replenishment and safety and security and predictability. And then that summer solstice time of the year, just to skip over all the times in between, but to give an example, then the summer solstice time of the year is like reflecting that our own needs also for contribution and self-expression and acknowledgement. And so really recognizing and accepting all of these different parts of ourselves following the cycles of nature. Just as, yeah, we go through the winter and summer and also dark moon and full moon. And of course, just every day and night we go through that. And so this is about embracing our internal darkness as well as our light, because we're so often told these days to like just go for the light or just stay positive all the time. And I think it's really important not to suppress the emotional realities that and experiences that are very much part of our lives, and to allow ourselves to be all of who we are. So that's a part of what I teach in the Year Spiral, which is my year-long program on engaging nature's seasons for inner growth and healing the wise woman way. And in there, we do look at the 8 different seasons. So the solstices, equinoxes, and then the halfway points in between. And each of them as a season. And in a very like, just grounded, nature connected way, we have an herbal ally for each season and a self-healing ritual for each season. And then also dive deeper into more of the psychological aspects of how that season can support, and engaging with that season can support your inner growth and healing.
I love this. This is something of like a major interest to me, and something I feel like each year just becomes kind of like sinking in, you know, to a deeper depth of understanding that and seeing, yeah, those natural cycles being reflected. And yeah, really powerful things too.
Yeah, it seems really resonant with how you're just so, like, it seems like you really bring people to the plants and the earth and really share and resonate, you know, we're sisters in that way of just really being all about bringing us closer to nature. And
yeah, I'm so grateful that my first studies were like that, in that, I don't know if you know Karen Sherwood, she was also in the Pacific Northwest and, you know, knows Inglesong and everything, but yeah, you know, my first studies were about, it really was about connecting to nature. And so then when I found this other, when I went into clinical herbalism, the people I studied with clinical herbalism, it was not about nature connection. It was kind of like more like a pharmacy, you know, like someone has like a problem that we can diagnose using energetic terms and, you know, different philosophies. And then we like come up with the, you know, the formula that we give them, but it wasn't about like being connected to the plants. And I'm so grateful for my clinical training. So grateful for the years I spent as a clinical herbalist, no regrets. But in the end, like, this is what I've shifted back to, because this is the most, like, I don't know, soul fulfilling for me, and the most magical on a very grounded level. I mean, there's just nothing like that connection that you can actually have with the plants. And So I really resonate with your offerings, Karina, and they sound so beautiful. And to spend a whole year, as you've described it, with the plant allies and really sinking into those, you know, the gifts of that season. I truly feel like this is one of the most healing things we can do for our culture right now, because we were oddly, many people, I won't speak for everybody, but many of us were raised in this weird separation where we even think that nature is separate from us. The example that I often give is I was raised in southern Utah, which is the desert, right? Like red rocks and desert and all that stuff. And I distinctly remember, like in elementary school, you know, there'd be like that board that the teacher would like post things to, and you'd have like the month there. And I remember there'd be like snowmen like on the board, and like snowflakes would be like all over the classroom. It was like, we don't have snow. Like that was just so, you know, like looking back on just that's just like a strange example, but there's so much of that. Like, why weren't we learning about the plants and places of our bioregion? You know, why were we learning about snowmen? Anyway, I just think we have a lot of growth to do with that, of learning to connect with the world around us and being in touch with the seasons. And it just is my mind had just totally boggled, Karina. Like why, like we're often many people are expected to like wake up and go to work at the same time all throughout the entire year. Like no matter that, like the light is dramatically different, the driving conditions are different. Sometimes, you know, it's like, but it's always the same. Like it's just a weird thing that many people in our culture are asked to do.
Yeah, and it's like I was talking about with the summer solstice season, or that would also line up with a full moon. It's like we do naturally have needs to contribute, and at that time of the year, at that time of our lives, we're like putting so much out, but then our society expects us to be there all the time. So like what you're saying, you know, we're expected to be in the summer solstice and in the full moon and like always be productive and, you know, nice and happy and light and positive. And so reconnecting with our innate needs and seeing them reflected on the cycle of the year, it's really profound for a lot of women. I work with women, yeah, to embrace that dark moon time, and as well as the full moon time.
Yeah, it's a powerful offering and such a, I think herbalism can be this great pathway into that, you know, deeper knowing and understanding. And I want to say it's a compliment, but I just feel like it's more of like it's the same path as herbalism. It's just like further along or deeper or something, you know, it's very intertwined.
Well, it was really important for me to do this inner growth and healing work around just a lot of difficult experiences from early in life that had kind of, yeah, just led to a lot of ongoing challenges in adult life, that really being able to dive deeper to these roots of healing also has profoundly supported my physical health as well as my emotional health. And so I'm seeing that a lot around just how it can go hand in hand with the herbs. And I will say, I was going to say earlier, and I kind of lost my train there, but yeah, that sometimes we'll be afraid of connecting to our needs. You know, when I say like we have needs for rest, it's like, oh no, I shouldn't have needs, and B, I shouldn't need to rest. And so also part of that reminder is like, well, when our basic needs are met, like for rest and safety and respect and valuing, then we can contribute from a place of our cup flowing over rather than a place of depletion. And our needs for contribution are also innate human needs. Like we all want to make the world a better place. So if you reconnect with your needs, it also means you're going to want to contribute to the world in your own unique ways. So that's just a little bit more of a taste of the types of things we explore.
Oh, that's wonderful, Karina. Well, I've loved all of your sharing today, your story, hearing your work and the way you work with Mugwort, your beautiful offering with the nature connection. And if you're ready, we could go on to the last question. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Well, the last question I have for you is, how do herbs instill hope in you?
Yeah. They so do. It's like, again, these cycles of the seasons. So in the spring, when I see mugwort sprouting up, you know, where I am, it's March, April, and I'm like, oh, look, there they are. There's the little leaves are coming back up, and the nettles and the dandelion and the other early greens, the wild onions. It just brings me so much joy, and to know that's always going to return. And then I'll watch, you know, the mugwort's like, okay, growing nice and big and high. And we're around the midsummer season. And this is like, yeah, the time of contributing. It's also the time that like the garden is overflowing with tomatoes and zucchinis. And it's when so many of the herbs are ready and wanting to be harvested. And it's like, how do I hold all this fullness? And then we also trust that, okay, winter is coming. And then as we move even like to that Lammas season that I was sharing, like the Lammas season, it's no longer that the days are getting longer and longer. And now the days are getting shorter and we're moving back toward the darker time of the year. And so it creates this like savoring, this natural desire to like savor our connections and our community at that time of the year. And I love the winter. I love the darkness. I love the quiet. I know as as an herbalist, I've often felt like, oh, you know, like when the plants die back, then I can't make medicine of them. I can't teach about them. It's like, ah, you know, I get to have more rest. So of course I love the green and growing things as well. So just honoring each of those places and watching how the plants, just like the trust of getting to know the plants year after year, and you really start to incorporate them in your life, in it becomes like herbal rituals. You know, making my mugwort vinegar in the spring is just a very simple, earthy ritual. And that I'm sure for so many ancient and indigenous earth-based peoples, it's like those plants getting to know over the cycles of the seasons is part of where we get that trust and that hope for ourselves, and for just knowing that the cycles of nature continue. And when we're in deep or difficult times, personally or collectively, watching the plants help support us to come back to the innate cycles of light and dark, and that spiral that we're constantly moving through as the earth and the plants move through that spiral.
Oh, that's beautiful, Karina. Makes me think back to young Karina, who just, I feel like you had this like inner, like ancestral knowing with like, oh, if like things happen, my family can survive on nuts and berries, and feeling that like just that safety that you talked about with that. And that just, it feels like you had that realization as a kid, and you've been just kind of growing into that and realizing that on these deeper and deeper levels throughout your life.
Thanks. Yeah, the plants really were my source of safety and solace for so long, and nature was the only place I felt safe. And so it's been then, huge to find that source of safety within myself. And it has been through recognizing how the outer landscape of the earth and the plants reflect my internal and our internal landscapes as well.
Well, thank you so much, Karina. Thanks for taking the time to share so much with us today. I've just really been a pleasure to get to know you.
Oh, thank you, Rosalie. I'm just delighted that we finally got to connect after all of these years. Thank you so much for making the time and for all that you're doing and holding in the herbal world. I just love seeing you as a pillar out there these days.
Oh.
You really are.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been a true pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Don't forget to head over to the show notes at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com to download your beautifully illustrated recipe card and to get a transcript of this show. There, you'll also be able to sign up for my weekly newsletter, which is the best way to stay in touch with me. Karina has a fantastic website and lots of great offerings. And she's created a special link for you to check out even more information about mugwort. Visit www.karinawood.com/Rosalie. If you want more herbal episodes to come your way, then one of the best ways to support this podcast is by subscribing on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. I deeply believe that this world needs more herbalists and plant-centered folks, and I'm so glad that you're here as part of this herbal community. Also, a big round of thanks to the people all over the world who make this podcast happen week to week. Nicole Paul is the project manager who oversees the whole operation from guest outreach to writing show notes to actually uploading each episode and so many other things I don't even know. She really holds this whole thing together. Francesca is our fabulous video and audio editor. She not only makes listening more pleasant, she also adds beauty to the YouTube videos with plant images and video overlays. Tatiana Rusikova is the botanical illustrator who creates gorgeous plant and recipe illustrations for us. I love them. I know that you do too. Christy edits the recipe cards, and then Jenny creates them as well as the thumbnail images for YouTube. Michelle is the tech wizard behind the scenes, and Karen is our student services coordinator and customer support. For those of you who like to read along, Jennifer is who creates the transcripts each week. Xavier, my handsome French husband, is the cameraman and website IT guy. Thanks to Rising Appalachia for their beautiful song, Resilience. Find more of their music at risingappalachia.com. It takes an herbal village to make it all happen, including you. And one of the best ways to retain and fully understand something that you've just learned is to share it in your own words. With that in mind, I invite you to share your takeaways with me and the entire Herbs with Rosalie community. You can leave comments on my YouTube channel, on the herbswithrosaliepodcast.com show notes page, or simply hit reply to my Wednesday email. I read every comment that comes in, and I'm excited to hear your herbal thoughts on mugwort. Okay, you've lasted to the very end of the show, which means you get a gold star and this herbal tidbit. During our conversation, Karina shared how mugwort brings lucid dreaming. I have to admit that when I heard this as a young herbalist, I was very skeptical. It sounded a little too mystical to me. So I purposely tested this and took some mugwort tincture before going to bed and was pretty sure it wouldn't amount to much. To this day, I still remember the dreams that I had that night. So yeah, we hear all sorts of things about these plants, and there's nothing like trying it on for yourself. If you're interested in working with mugwort in this way, I recommend starting on a night you don't have any big events the following day, because for some, myself included, lucid dreaming can be less restful than other kinds of sleep. I do think that taking it close to bedtime or using the pillow, as Karina suggested, is important. I regularly have moxa at the acupuncturist, and I don't feel like I have lucid dreams that night. I'll be curious to hear your mugwort stories in the comments.